Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 229. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Uh-oh.
Did we lose you, Graham?
Oh, yeah, from the lake.
Oh, there we go.
I was trying to say, I was on mute there for a second. I was so excited, I forgot to unmute.
I knew that would happen.
I do that sometimes.
And our buddy Phil Wilson is off this week. There's a huge sale on men's underwear at Sears, so he didn't want to miss that.
Right, yeah, he stands in line. Sort of like the iPhone.
Like waiting for the first iPhone, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. Anyway, so there's, you know... You remember how we talked about this last summer, about how there was always stuff going on until the summer hit? But
yeah.
Starting last summer, it was like, oh, my God, yeah. It's literally like there's no seasonality anymore. It's just cranking every week, it seems. So that's pretty amazing.
A lot of news.
I was absolutely delighted to see our buddies at SmartThings launch their own store.
Yeah, they got some good coverage.
They not only got good coverage, I mean, there's not a lot of stuff in the store yet, but I'm frankly really impressed that they've already got some third-party products from Aon Labs and GE Lighting Solutions. And I'm glad, because I went over to Home Depot, went to Lowe's, went to Menards, trying to find sensor switches of any kind, by preferably Z-Wave ones, because those go the longest distance, but I couldn't find any. So it's nice to...
When will these things start to get reasonable in price? Because it starts like the sensors are like $60-$70 each,
right?
And some of them are quite a bit more than that. So when will it get into like X10 territory, where you can get a bunch of them for $50?
Well, it'll have to. It's all about volume.
Yeah,
it's going to have to get cranked up. And right now, one of the things that everybody's talking about is the fact that there really isn't a consistent standard. SmartThings, the hub, handles everything, right? Pretty much all the protocols.
But right. They're the translation layer.
Exactly.
That makes everything work.
Yep. And so right now there's still not a standard that everybody's agreeing to, because it's still emerging.
And well, so, do you think there ever really will be one? Because for doing what they're trying to do, they have a lot of different kinds of manufacturers that are sort of in different industries.
Yes.
And it's unlikely that they would come together on any kind of standard. So I think you're going to have someone like SmartThings in the middle playing traffic cop.
And having an interface for developers so you can actually create some good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're actually running an e-commerce store for
Internet
of Things. They're going to sell anything and everything, huh? Or are they going to be real picky about what they...
Oh, they'll be real picky. So, absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be the best of what works with their stuff.
Right. And in a post that I did on Minivate, just a quick one, the day they announced it, I did put the link back in about their preliminary list of tested devices, because they keep buying these Zigbee, Z-Wave, and Wi-Fi devices to test them. And so they've got a whole list there of things that they know are compatible and will work. So you can see that there's more things coming. What I'm actually intrigued by is the Yale and Schlage door locks, where you can open doors remotely. I think that's kind of cool.
Does that work with like a sensor where you just get near it, like cars, some of the cars do now?
Well,
where you don't really need a key. It just sort of enables it when you're close.
That's interesting you ask, Tim. There's actually
that's a segue.
Yeah. Well, there's a one of the things from SmartThings is a presence sensor.
Right.
And
that's the
one that
Julio was talking about in his little
precisely. Yeah. So it basically, there's motion sensors and so forth as well, but the presence sensor is set up so that you can walk in and have the lights go on, or you can walk in and have the shades go up.
It would work the same way with locks, then, where you got near it and it would open.
Precisely.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah. That would be very
handy. Be very cool.
Yeah, and then when you forget at the when you leave, it locks it up for you.
Locks it up, absolutely.
So they must be staffing up a lot to be able to run a whole operation like this. I mean, what are the implications there to be running a big store? I mean, or do they have partners? I mean, are they just having all these drop shipping, having the manufacturers ship all this stuff? Or exactly what is the business
I would doubt that. I do not know the answer. I have not been able to connect with Ben. You know, he's out in Washington, D.C. now.
Oh, not permanently.
Well, no, I think for the next couple of years at least.
You're kidding.
Yeah. No, they moved. They moved.
Oh, I had no idea. Yeah. He picked up and went out there, huh?
Yep.
With
Alan. Yep. I know that he sent out a tweet saying, thank God I can get away from Graham Thickens. But anyway, actually, he said he was going to really miss you.
I missed that. I didn't realize. Now, does that mean a bunch of the others are moving out there, too?
No, I think just co-founders and leadership are out there. But based on what they get back to your thing about the store itself, a store like this with the frankly few number of SKUs they've got, stock keeping units, if one person could run this.
How many SKUs are they talking?
Well, they've got their kits. I would say there's maybe 20.
Oh, that's
20,
all.
25 at this point. Yeah.
No, this space will get, they'll have more players.
Absolutely. So speaking of entrepreneurs, we were talking before the show started about that three Carleton College students who have started something called Pipeline MSP. I don't know if you've heard about that, Tim, pipelinemsp.com.
Not until you put it into the chat here.
Yeah. It's I saw a tweet from Coco MSP about it, and they're basically trying to discover entrepreneurs and startups in the Minnesota business community and then research what they're doing and how they're going to impact the business ecosystem. So they seem to be focusing on B2B, but I'm not really sure. That's what it looks like, because they're talking about GIS, Global Information Systems, vendors and medical product companies and so forth. And it's going to be interesting because, you know, the Minnesota Cup announced their finalists. When did that come out? That was
just a few days ago. A
couple of days ago, yeah.
Yeah. Now, how many of these companies do you guys know? I mean, because this is they're in like every space. You know, social entrepreneur and life sciences and energy, clean tech, high tech.
Yeah, I didn't know as many as I thought I would, but of course, KidBlog, one of the finalists in the general division, is the one I know the best.
Right.
I've heard of a few of the others, but social and life science and student, you know, don't know much about them. In fact, I don't think I've heard of any of them in those categories, but then I haven't been following along and reading about all the semifinalists. There were like 57 semifinalists, and now we're down to 18 finalists.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of names in here. They're going to be new to virtually anyone who hasn't been close to the Minnesota Cup process here.
Yeah.
So they've been working with their mentors for a month or 6 weeks now, and refining their business plans, and the judging took place and narrowed it down to 18, three in each of six categories.
Right.
Interestingly, KidBlog is not in high tech, it's in general. The three in high tech are cognitive games for health, smart signal technologies, which I believe I have heard of, and When I Work, a web app for employee scheduling and communication. So, a lot of new names. And now we'll know in about 3 to 4 weeks. I want to say it's September 10th. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
Now, the final reception where they announce the winners in each category. They might pre-announce the winner and runner-up in each category, and then at the reception, they announce the overall winner. who gets the big cash, you know, 50 yeah. grand or whatever it is now, 75, I don't know. So, yeah, another few weeks and we'll know.
Well, so this Cognitive Games for Health is CogCubed. And, you know,
yes, oh, that's it. The yeah, one that's, you wrote yeah, about. Yeah, okay, why yeah. do they go by two names?
Well, I'm trying to figure that out because yeah. Kurt Roots, you know, he wrote for Minovate for a while until he got cranked up on this thing. And that one looks very, very promising. And you look at the About page, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's just like, wow, what a great group of folks behind the company.
Yeah, and that's in the high tech division as opposed to life science health division.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's got some crossover appeal.
Yeah, so. It's hard to categorize some of these, or they have to decide which category they want to enter in, I guess, is how it's done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think what's really funny is if you guys remember when we started Minovate back in February of 2008, we pretty much knew everybody doing everything in this town.
Oh, we thought we did.
We thought we did anyway, but it was kind of amazing that just in that time, you know, 4+ years, look what's happened. It's like everybody and their brother has got something started, which is awesome.
Yeah, and now we need a college student project at Carleton to keep track of it all.
Well, what we need is a couple of guys to come out with a search engine and page ranking and start that here, you know, call it Gleagle or something. I don't know. Oh, man. So, Tim, what's going on with our pals at Best Buy? Anything?
Well, they're selling 3D printers.
They are selling 3D printers. That's right.
That's why I put that story in. It's kind of interesting. But now they made a turnaround, and there's two kinds of stories about them. Now there's the kind of story that says, "Hey, they're doing great. The transformation is in full swing, and you know, bright days ahead." And then there's the others, like the couple of links I stuck in, which are like questioning: can they really sustain this over the long haul? Can they beat Amazon sort of at their own game while they still have a brick and mortar kind of business as well? So
yeah.
And you know, the jury is sort of still out, but Jolie is really it's really turned things around in the year or so he's been there. So the cost cutting has worked, and they're refocused, and what they've done in the past year has really turned the company around, and their stock's tripled.
Well, that's the thing, is that you look at the stock itself and just, oh my God, they are just on a roll. So
yeah, so as long as he can do that, he's going to stay gainfully employed and make millions of dollars.
Right. Well,
he's guaranteed millions whether he stays gainfully employed there or not. But I guess this store within a store thing, they admit, is still, you know, a work in progress, and you know, they don't claim that they've found the magic formula yet necessarily. You know, they're still that still has to play out to see how well they're going to be able to do with that whole concept. And I guess it's still being built out, right? In many of the stores.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
The stores down here, in fact, the one that I go to in Burnsville is kind of one of their flagship stores. And they've had that Samsung experience for quite some time now. And it's very Genius Bar-like.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, how about the Microsoft store down there?
I don't know. It's kind of weak, actually. When I go and if I want to see Microsoft stuff in one place, I'll just stop into their store in the Mall of America, which is, I think, a better experience.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't stop by there much because there's not a whole lot going on.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Well, at the Microsoft store, I may, you know, like check in this weekend to take a look at that new Nokia phone, but that's about it. You know,
well, either that or to chat about Ballmer.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Sure,
right.
All the employees will be happy to do that.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, you know, wasn't that something?
Wow. Oh, how geez. The stock jumped when he resigned.
Yeah. How would you feel? How would you feel about the fact that you made about $800 million because you left?
Well, he's not left yet.
No, well, I know, announced that he was leaving.
Is it 12 months out?
Yes.
Well, within the next 12 months. So this is sort of like Alex Rodriguez, you know, it's he's got a while before he gets the final knife in the back.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, I know you guys don't think he was that great, and certainly he didn't. Some of the bets he made didn't pay off, but he did, actually grow the company quite a bit during the time that he was CEO. So he did some good things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, his big bet on, rebooting mobile just didn't work or hasn't worked yet. But that's sort of akin to Gates's bet on tablet computing back in the 90s and early part of the 2000s, which, you know, were failures except in some vertical industries like healthcare. But he was on the right track. I mean, it was the right thing. It's just their implementation was wrong, and I think the same thing is happening with mobile. Although I think that Microsoft is closer with mobile than they were with tablet computing, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it may not matter because iOS and Android are so entrenched in the market that is there a place for a number three player is a question.
Well, and what's interesting is the one article that I read recently, and I'll see if I can find a link in the show notes, was about Microsoft's force ranking system for employees, and every 6 months they force rank, and so you've got to. And I used to do that when I was at Lawson. I had to force rank. What it means is that if you've got 10 people, you have to put break them up. 25% are the top performers, 25% are good, 25% is average, and 25% are poor. And then they basically nuke the poor across the board.
Yep.
And so as a consequence of that, and a lot of people argue this back and forth, and Ballmer said he was going to continue with this no matter what, people argue that what it ends up doing is it ends up people sabotage one another, and they work at cross purposes because they don't want to be in that bottom 25%.
Yep.
And so it's... it's kind of bred this contempt for one another at Microsoft versus collaborating on projects and having everybody move forward. So the tough part about that is that it rewards individual contributions, but it doesn't get everybody in front of the wagon pulling forward. You got some people riding in it, others, holding it back. Digging their heels in with ropes tied to the wagon to keep it from moving forward, rather than have everybody in front pulling forward. So, yeah, tough stuff.
Sounds like a great place to work.
Yeah.
I missed it.
Yeah. Well, Tim, you put this link in there about, Best Buy, can stores be assets for them versus what Amazon has?
Yep.
And my absolute belief is that the stores are an asset, and that most people want to look and touch and feel and experience products before they buy them.
Yep.
A
lot of people don't know what they want. I mean, a lot of us that read online reviews, we can get a short list down. So I can get, if I'm not sure exactly what I want to buy and in some category, I can, go online, but most people don't do this, and figure out what other people are saying, choose two or three, and then go out and look at them. And then the one that appeals to me that has the best price or the best value for price usually wins. But a lot of people, they just don't know what they want. So going into a store like a Best Buy that has a big selection and is playing with stuff, that's a big asset, which Amazon just doesn't have.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I mean, they're not going to win if someone says, yeah, I want a new Kindle reader, right? So they've made up their mind. They want a Kindle reader. I mean, you should just buy from Amazon because it's going to be the better experience. than buying it from Best Buy, because it'll show up, it'll link to your account. You don't have to do anything. You open it up and turn it on, and it's got all your books on it. You
know? Right.
Where if you buy it at any place else, you have to go through the process of using their goofy keyboard and keying in your account information to sync it, which is not a great experience, especially if you buy the really cheap one. The little keyboard is just horrendous. So I mean, it's just better all around for people, and the price is the same, or it's less, you know. So they're not going to win if someone's already made up their mind like that, but they will win for people that don't know what they want. They want to look at the Nook, they want to look at the Kindle, you know, maybe the Kobo Reader, whatever. They've got all those at Best Buy. People look at.
So I've got it. Best Buy is for the uninformed shopper.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
that's the new campaign.
But the other thing is, you know, you can't buy those Chromecasts at on Amazon, because, you know, I mean, they show up and they're sold out immediately. But you can at Best Buy, and, you know, they array them in the stores. And if you look at their stock indicator, they'll see that, let's say, Minnetonka has them, you know. And if I really wanted to get one, I could drive up to Minnetonka and probably buy one.
Are they moving fast? Or are they selling out quickly?
Yeah, you have to look at their stock thing on the website, and you can see what stores possibly have them, and you call the store to verify. And then if they say yes, then if you want
to jump, then
you jump in the car and you drive over there,
and you go fight some woman who runs in there same time you do, and tries to grab.
That's the risk. That's the risk you take. You know,
I remember doing that with the Jawbone Up, and getting to one store and grabbing the last black large, and some guy came in right behind me, wanted the same thing, and I knew who he was, and it's like I just aced him out by about 30 seconds.
Oh, funny.
But well, I wasn't going to give it up, and the damn thing ended up breaking anyway, and that first round of theirs was a complete bust, and they gave us all our money back. Jawbone did.
Huh.
Well, that was good.
To your point, Tim, it shows that there's availability in Roseville.
Oh yeah,
at the Best Buy. Right, yeah, I'm looking right now. So yeah, I've never done that.
I would call the store though, because that stock indicator is kind of sort of what they've got. It's not 100%.
Not real time, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So if you're gonna drive all the way to Roseville, too, you want to make sure that they've got it. I don't think they'll. They'll put one aside for you, but you could always ask.
Yeah, well, I can wait till it's 105 degree heat index and then stop there and then go out to the state fair.
Yeah, there you go.
How's that for a strategy?
There you go.
Hey,
are you going to go to the state fair this year?
Oh, God, yes.
Really? Yeah.
Well, my wife's in Germany, so I'm going to go over there at some point.
Okay. Every time we go there, and we go, I don't know, once every maybe 5 years. And every time we go, we at the end of it, we say, why the heck did we go?
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
It's like, there's like, you know, I don't know. Everybody in the state is there. It's always the blazing hot. And then to get anything to eat or drink, it's like, you know, $20 a head, you know?
Well, yeah. Say, I just have to, I'm going to have to put this link to in the show notes. I did a post called Historic Minneapolis Photos on my own blog. And I was poking around on the internet, and the Hennepin County Library System has this Minneapolis collection of historical photos and newspapers and stuff. And they had a photo of the first Minnesota State Fair held at Fort Snelling in 1860.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
And I'll put a link in the show notes so that people can go see that.
Like 15 people there or something. And
oh no, it looks like there's maybe, I don't know, maybe 100, all clustered in one area. And
were they eating stuff on a stick?
Oh God. Yeah, probably.
Oh, well, I hope it wasn't guinea pig on a stick. Oh my God. Did you guys read that story about the street fair in Minneapolis? I shouldn't bring this up when you're heading to the fair, Steve, assuming you're going to eat some of that food there, but God,
thanks.
That was a bad news deal where people were eating tainted guinea pig meat. Street fair on Lake Street.
When I've eaten guinea pig, I do not want it to be tainted.
I don't. Yeah, when you're eating guinea pig, don't do it at a street fair. Okay.
Did people know it was a guinea pig?
Apparently, it was an Ecuadorian street festival, and that's like a delicacy to Ecuadorians or something. Okay.
Well, yeah. Remind me not to go to Ecuador.
Yeah, oh, geez. Really. I don't eat food at street fairs, and that's one reason why I guess I'm not big on the fair. I couldn't eat that stuff, man.
Well, all I know is that my daughter wants to go back to Mexico City. She loved it so much. She had so much fun staying in this youth hostel after her several-week adventure as a U of M Spanish immersion student down there. They were staying with a host family. And she was going back and forth with a guy that she had met there. And he had stayed another week. And she never knew this, but apparently he went out and ate at a street vendor. And the guy had washed the vegetables that he put on the sandwich thing with water. And of course, you know what happened. The guy was sick for 2 days.
Oh, God.
And, oh, geez.
You hear so many stories of people going to Mexico like that and getting just unbelievably sick, and it, like, ruins their whole vacation.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Say, yeah. You know, you mentioned, Tim, Best Buy selling 3D printers, and who is this Affinia desktop 3D printing company? They do all kinds of other stuff, but I had never heard of these guys.
I hadn't either, and they're in Chanhassen.
They're in Chanhassen. Yeah.
I know, which is kind of weird. So I don't know, maybe we're the hotbed of 3D printing here?
It sure would be great.
Actually, this does ring a bell to me. I know the guy who does their marketing.
Really?
He's a fraternity brother. Well, he's from a younger generation than me. But yeah, I had heard of this, and it's a weird deal. It's like they're licensing technology from Asia, I think. So it's not their own. They weren't the inventors of this.
Marketing.
Oh, okay.
They're the marketing arm for the U.S. Maybe. I'm not really sure exactly what the relationship is. But
they're in the game.
Oh, yeah. And they've been in the game for a while, but they're stepping it up now, apparently. Five major online merchants, Tiger Direct, Staples Canada, Best Buy, CDW, and B&H Photo Video.
Huh. Yeah, big New York vendor.
Oh, I buy tons of stuff. By the way, I have to tell you, if anybody is interested in downloading one of the best iPad apps I've ever used, it's the B&H photo video e-commerce. Well, it's their catalog, basically, and e-commerce. Knocked it out of the park. It's the best thing I've ever used on the iPad in terms of catalogs.
If you're trying to find a specific product.
You just want to browse. Because, you know, they used to send me this paper catalog that I swear to God weighed 8 pounds. And I just signed up and said, you know, don't send that to me anymore because stop chopping trees down. You don't need to do that. And but this iPad app, oh, my God. You know, I can kind of see that this is where iPad apps or tablet apps overall need to go with respect to e-commerce. It just is that good. So anyway.
All right. So Steve, you know, you've got to get one of these things so I can come over and make my Raspberry Pi case.
What?
It's only $1,600 for the.
You mean the printer?
Yeah, the printer itself. Yeah.
Huh. Well, there's a kid. I'll see if I can find this link. But there's a kid that I think he's in the UK that started a company to make Raspberry Pi cases, and he grossed in 2012, £879,000.
Is he making close to $1 million? A 3D printer?
Probably not. You don't care about it if it's not 3D printer.
Well, he probably did the prototype that way and then sent it over to Asia and had them stamp them out. You know,
yeah, I would say that's probably.
Because you look at the cases that are available, and a lot of them are really, you know, kind of poor. And I'm looking for something higher quality, so that's why I wanted to build it, you know, on a 3D printer, because you can do some pretty amazing stuff with it.
Well, so let me ask you guys this. Do you know of any 3D printing service bureaus?
Because there was one here in town, but I think they shut down.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. There was, I forgot what they were called, but.
Were they part of that maker community or that maker meetup group? Or
They grew out of that, but I don't think they could make it. So.
Interesting. Well, you know what for those of you listening to this podcast, one of the challenges is everybody that comes in to the software. I've got a laptop fed into my interface, and everybody's on Skype there, and then I'm on a microphone and I have two separate channels. Well, the holy grail would be to have one computer for each person. So if it's the four of us and a guest, then that would mean I would need four other computers. Well, I've been thinking about what it would take to build four Raspberry Pis and have those as, running Skype, and each one of those would be a separate channel.
Mm-hmm. And I think you could do that.
Think that would be fairly easy?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You just put Raspbian on there and then put Skype on each one.
Yeah.
You'd have to have different Skype accounts, I think. Or could you run multiple instances of the same account at the same time?
You wouldn't want to do that, because then they would... Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I think you would have to have... You'd have to...
Have separate accounts.
Create separate accounts, which wouldn't be a
big deal. Which wouldn't be a big deal. Yeah.
So the place was called The Mill. And it was closed. It was closed in March this year.
Hmm. Okay. Not enough. Is somebody running something in the sink?
Not me.
Not me. I have no sink in the car here in the audio booth.
It does sound like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That's weird. Okay, let's get back to this discussion real quickly about Steve Ballmer.
Oh, okay. I thought you wanted to go over.
Well, we did kind of skip over that a little bit. It's my fault. I'm sorry, but what do you guys think is next for Microsoft?
Well, they're going to get a new CEO, and I hope they get someone from the outside. But we'll see.
I'd be shocked. I think this Tony Bates sounds like the one that's, the former CEO of Skype. Sounds like the money's on him, or the guy Nadella who's heading up their cloud and enterprise group. At least that was the opinion of a writer at InfoWorld who did kind of an interesting piece on, okay, who are all the contenders inside and out? And he basically ruled out most of the outside ones as just not, the timing's not right, or they're retired, or they're just not, they aren't appropriate, like Mark Hurd or, people like that, or the guy
Scott
that jumped.
Scott Forstall. Can you imagine Forstall?
Yeah. Oh, God. Please.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
So you don't think they would?
I would think that Sanofsky is in the running, too.
That's what I was just going to say. Don't you think they'd go out and reach out and grab him, Steve Sanofsky?
Well, he made a lot of enemies, though, so it depends. Okay. I think it all comes down to, who Bill Gates likes, because he has some control of the process.
Oh, yeah.
I would say a lot of control.
So if he and Sanofsky just don't see eye to eye, then there's no way. But I think that he's a possibility. And Stephen Elop, I think there's a strong possibility that Nokia might be acquired by Microsoft, and then Elop would be the CEO of the whole
shebang. The whole thing, yeah. Yep. Well, it's going to be interesting to watch, because it's to see where they go. There's a lot of people who are deeply, deeply concerned, though, about the fact that there's clearly a backdoor in Skype, and there's a very, very strong alleged rumors that about having a backdoor in Windows 8.
That's why I don't use Windows 8.
Yeah. By the way, I just went out and bought a new PC because we had to have one for our accounting. Because the one we had was getting a little long in the tooth. And I have to tell you that I have a, I probably now spent 5 hours or so configuring this PC running Windows 8. The depth of my hatred for it is only matched by my hatred for Windows Vista.
Well, so, you know what I would do if I were you? I would go on to eBay or Newegg or someplace, or maybe even go down to Micro Center and just get Windows 7.
Just an OEM of. Well, I have Windows 7.
OEM version Windows 7 Professional. Low level format the darn thing and stick 7 on there, because 7 is rock solid. It works great.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm going to keep using 7 for another decade, just like I used XP until about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I use XP from like 1999 or 98, whenever it came out. It was, you know, because I was on NT4 back then. This is when I was still at Kodak. And they put me on NT4 for like a month, and it was a terrible experience. So I convinced the IT guy, because I complained every day, to put me on XP, and he's like, okay, here you go.
Oh, great. So, I have to tell you guys a funny story, and I'm not talking out of school because it's not, I'm not revealing anything, but my daughter, you know, went to work for Best Buy in HR, and she has a job where she does exceptions. So if an employee needs to have some update on their records and so forth, and her team, the team she's on, gets these exceptions, and they've got to go in and make modifications to the software. And so they give her this gigantic PC running Windows XP.
And
she comes home and she goes, "You guys, look at this thing." And I looked at it. Well, first of all, it's a hand-me-down, which is to be expected. But secondly,
It's probably Dell, right?
It's an HP, but it probably weighs 20 pounds. And it's got I think it's a 15.5 inch, but it looks like a 17 inch. I mean, it's just, but like most corporations, they have so much software that they've written that won't run on anything but XP. And it's the same thing. When my dad was in the hospital in March, everything's on XP. I go to my doctor, we go to the clinic, and it's the same thing. Everything's on XP. I brought my son over to Minute Clinic at a Target, and they spun the monitor around to show us something, and they're running Windows XP. It's like, what?
Well, you know, until recently, a lot of that stuff was running Windows 2000.
Oh, man.
And that was a great version of Windows. Windows 2000 was just rock solid.
Oh, I agree. Yep.
So,
well, they tried to do too much after that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of like applications that people had built, you know, that this wouldn't run the same or wouldn't run at all. So getting all those people to upgrade, it's just a real problem. And you know, if you got something that works, it's running just as fast as you want, and it's secure and whatever. There is no real reason to upgrade. I think that's Microsoft's real issue, is that there isn't a compelling reason to upgrade anymore. Like there was in the past, the new features or usability was improved or what have you. There's just not a really great reason. And even if you look at our little world here on the Mac, you know, if you go back to Tiger, you know, I mean, Tiger is still perfectly usable, right? We just keep upgrading because we're, you know, we have to have the latest and greatest. And yeah, I like some of the new iCloud features and all this, but the difference between Mountain Lion and Lion is not that great. You know, I could still use Lion and be perfectly happy. Although I do like the iCloud features, so that's why I'm on Mountain Lion.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm going to upgrade the thing to Mavericks, although I don't know. I think probably Graham will convince me because of the surfing connection.
Think so?
I don't know. Maybe he fell asleep.
Maybe. Say, I need to tell you guys that I just saw this last night, but if you have an iCloud account, if you go to iCloud.com and sign in, the beta of Pages, Numbers, and Keynote are online. Remember they were going to put iWork online? They're online. I've been kind of playing with it, and It's, oh my God, it's literally one of the best HTML5 apps I've ever used.
No, I tried it too. It's actually pretty good, but it still doesn't, it's not 100%. So for instance, I thought I'll give it an easy document to deal with. So I exported out the show notes for the show last week because I had it in the notes to talk about.
Yeah.
And I imported it into the Pages app. And it wouldn't open. It just gives me a cryptic error saying that it's not compatible or there's some problem or whatever. So even taking a simple text document that's in a doc file but out of, you know, Google doesn't work there right now. I'm sure if I opened it up in either Pages on the on my Mac or open it up in Word and then imported it, it probably would work fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
no, there's still compatibility issues like that. And I think the biggest killer is you can't collaborate like you can with Google Docs yet.
That is a killer. Yeah.
And they should really address that.
Yep.
But I, you know, I could see that. In fact, you know, I could just see using that as your office suite on, say, like one of these Chromebooks, you know? So they're like $200, $250. They're nice little computers that run Google Chrome, basically the browser. And, you know, you run that as your productivity suite and you're in good shape. You come back to your Mac at home. I mean, that would be a great solution, I think.
Well, the only thing I have yet to really leverage iCloud at all, mainly because, you know, all of us we're more entrenched in Google because you can do more things with Google Docs and so forth. That's one part. But the other part is I've turned iMessage off. And the reason is the latency. So I'll send my wife a text message and she may get it, you know, 4 or 5 minutes later and we're going to meet somewhere at the Mall of America, let's say.
Yeah.
And I'll see her and she'll be like, hey, and I said, didn't you get my message? No. And then we're walking along all of a sudden, ding, you know, like a minute later. But if I turn it off, it'll force send a direct text message and she'll get it, you know, in 20 seconds. So the latency is a killer.
Yeah. That whole app, the messages app, I used to use it and I just don't anymore. I've gone back to Adium. Although I am trying Trillium again, just to see if that's any better, but it's just not as I use it for IM. I don't have an iPhone. I don't use it for SMS.
Yeah, yeah.
And I found that because I have it on all the time, and people just were saying, "Hey, you've been offline all week." I'm like, "No," so it was you know. People that saw me on the AIM on messages, that was a problem. And most people now are hitting me on Hangouts because that's running on all my devices.
Right.
You know, and it's always logged in. So as long as you're not in airplane mode, you're online.
Well, so I'm using Google Voice to point to my iPhone and also my Skype in. I've got a phone number for Skype. And honest to God, I've yet to figure out how to stop. When somebody calls me, it's like my entire world begins to ring because Google Chat, it's ringing in email, it's ringing in Google Hangouts, it's ringing on my phone, my iPad, and my, you know, if I got my MacBook Air running, it's ringing on that. It's like, holy buckets. So I got to figure that one out. But it's amazing. Well, we should probably get close to the end here. If you're listening to this on Saturday by any chance, or even early Sunday, Micro Center is still doing that Raspberry Pi in-store clinic, if you have an interest, at 2 o'clock.
Are you going to do that, Steve?
Yeah, I'm really seriously considering it. Because I was going to go to the fair tomorrow. And yes, I know we talked about the fair, but the reason I want to go is because when I'm going with someone else, they're like, nah, I don't want to go there. Nah, I don't want to go there. Nah, I don't want to. Let's go over here. It's like, no, I want to go see this stuff. So I'm going to go out there.
You want to go to see the guys fishing. That's what you want to see.
No, I want to go climb on the tractors.
Oh. Ah, there you go.
No. I'm going to go hang out in the home ec area in the education building.
I like to see the animals, actually. That's my...
go get swine flu.
I want to go see the chickens, you know, see the cows.
There you go. You know?
That's what we go. More often than not, we go to the Dakota County Fair, which is, you know, I think it's in Farmington, but it's nearby here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a kind of a lower key, smaller version. And, you know, I just like to see the animals and see something on a stick. And it's, you know, it's still hot, but it's less expensive and there's not as many people there.
And you can get out of there, right?
And you get about 80% of the experience. Yeah. You spend an hour there, 2 hours there, whatever, and kind of go around and see the stuff. And then, you know.
Cool.
So we'll do that every other year or so. In fact, I think we'll have to do that this year. Yeah, if it's still on. I can't remember. I think it may have closed last weekend. But anywho.
The only other thing that comes to mind is that story about how the U of M launches a record number of startups in fiscal 2013.
Yeah.
And I was looking down this list of the 2013 startups, and boy, there's a lot of medical related
stuff. Out of the 14 that they launched, I counted about 11 of them seem to be healthcare, med tech, pharma related. There are three that aren't, one of which is kind of a healthcare IT startup. Another one is a smartphone breathalyzer. And the third one is the Apple technology that comes out of the U of M. You know, they come out with these new breeds of apples.
Right.
And it was something to do with Italy. So I don't know if they're growing these apples in Italy or whatever. But, yeah, kind of a weird mix there. But yeah, still heavily life science oriented out of the U of M Venture Center. But, you know, we don't hear much about them. They don't get the word out. The U, you know, puts out this annual release on how many startups they birthed. And I guess it was 12 the year before and 9 the year before that. So they are on an upswing.
Right. Justin Porter.
Porter, sure.
He's in this office for tech commercialization
The venture, and specifically the Venture Center, which is part of the Office of Technology Commercialization, right?
Right.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, we see him around. He's pretty active in the local startup community. And at Mini Demo, I think he was on stage introducing some of the startups. So, yeah, and by the way, Justin reminded me he's a regular listener. So, hello, Justin.
Hey.
So, he's part of that group. And it's a fairly large group over there. And, and they're sort of co-located with that University Enterprise Labs, which is a giant incubator, I recall there's 30-some startups that are incubated there over near University and 280. So it's a big deal, but we don't hear that much about them, unfortunately, but hopefully that'll change. And and they do claim they have a much higher rate of success, something like 75% of the startups that they have birthed are still in business, which is pretty remarkable, or it might even be higher than that. So, they are doing good things over at the U.
Yep, no kidding. Well, the last thing to mention is this tech cocktail thing coming up on October 2nd. Kim Gerritsen from Ovative Group reached out to Graham and I and wanted to just give us a heads up on this, and so I did a quick post on Minovate. But this is really looking like it would be a great opportunity for startups.
Yeah. Any chance they have to enter a competition and compete to get selected, and I don't know how many they're going to select out of the applications. But I noted that he said the startups that they do select for this event don't actually pitch at the event.
Correct.
But they need to be present to win. And to win, they're going to select two that go on to the national competition in Las Vegas. And, you may want to talk about that, about the CEO of Zappos.
Right. He's
his involvement in that.
Yeah, the CEO of Zappos, how do you pronounce his last name? Is it Tsai?
Something like
Tony,
that. Or
Tony Tsai or Say, yeah. There was an article about how he had bet $350 million of his own money on a Las Vegas startup scene in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think they call it a startup hub or
something. Yeah, to turn downtown Las Vegas into a hub. So I can only assume, I have not confirmed this, but I can only assume that he was kind of the driving force behind getting this Tech Cocktail Celebrate event being held there October 22nd, 23rd.
Yeah, and not only was he behind it, but Kim alerted me to the fact that he invested in Tech Cocktail. So Tech Cocktail has now taken outside venture money, and they may have done this previously too. They literally moved the operation to Las Vegas because Frank Gruber, the guy who runs it, was based out of D.C. So it's literally been moved to Vegas, and it's a pretty you know, big time event and content site now, and holds events all over the country and maybe even outside the country.
Yep.
And they do a really good job. Now, Kim pointed out that he's hosting this one on his own. The Tech Cocktail people aren't going to come to town, but he's been working with them for some time, and he's using their format and their promotion, and, you know, obviously the startups that get accepted into this event will be promoted on in a story on the site, and two of them will be selected to go to the national competition. And, you know, obviously what they're trying to do is get startups to move there. So,
well, sure.
You know, I don't know how many Minnesota startups want to move to Vegas, but I suspect there are some. And if it involves getting a higher visibility and more chance of raising money, and, you know, maybe Tony himself kicking in money into some of these startups, I suspect some of our local guys would be happy to go under those circumstances. So, yeah, it'll be a good event, and startups can apply right on that link that we'll post. And we know of probably, between Steve and I, probably 8 or 10 that have already applied.
Right, right.
So, yep. So it'll be good. I'm looking forward to that one. It is a $15 event, you know, to pay for the drinks. And,
well, that's, yeah, and that's just nickels and dimes for what you get out of it. Even if you just show up, it's worth $15. I mean,
oh yeah, it's a great event. Remember that one? Did you guys make it to the one they did at Coco a couple of years ago? It'd be like a year and a half. That was a really good event, and Kim was instrumental in getting Frank to come to town with his team and do that one. But I thought it was excellent, and they got 200 or more people out at that. And so, yeah, I'm glad to hear they're back, even though it's really just their name and Kim behind it. But it'll be great. God bless him for doing it.
Yeah, you know? No kidding. No kidding.
Gets us on the map a little bit more here in Minneapolis.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for listening this week, and we'll see you again next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
All right.
Yeah.
Take care, guys. You.